Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. I'm Valerie Bowling. I'm pleased to share a panel discussion from the 2019 POD, Partnership Opportunities and Drug Delivery Conference, on the future outlook for novel drug delivery technologies. The panel, moderated by AstraZeneca's Dr. Sean Davis, is joined by representatives from Pfizer, Battelle, Sanofi, Phosphorix, and J&J. The 2020 POD event will take place October 8th and 9th in Boston. Enjoy the podcast.
Hi, everyone. We're just about to get restarted, so if you can take your seats, we've got an exciting panel coming up for you. The next panel is focused on the future outlook of drug delivery. And so we're planning on focusing not just on the value of drug delivery technologies to patients, pharma, and innovators, but also on reviewing the current state of drug delivery technologies and where they may be going into the future. We'll talk a little bit about the baseline for large molecules and small molecules, but then quickly build to new modalities and where we think the technologies are going in the future. So we're just drawing all of our panelists together now. Each is going to introduce themselves, but we've got a great cross-section. We've got Advait Bhadkar from Pfizer, Andre from Battelle, Maria Teresa from Sanofi, Julia from Phosphorix, and Teresa from J&J. We're going to start just with a quick introduction of each of our panelists, get a little background on them so you understand their points of view, and provide a little context for some of their questions and potential answers. So do we just want to start with Maria Teresa?
Good morning to everyone. Maria Teresa Peracchia, Sanofi. Actually, I've been in Sanofi for 20 years, starting with drug delivery. And then for 10 years, I did the project management. I was CMC project leader, actually, for Dupixent, that is now on the market. And recently, I joined Biologics R&D, where I'm in charge of the drug delivery strategy for biologics. And so we have, I would say, in the building phase of with different axes we are developing. And thanks a lot to the organizer and to Sean for this opportunity to be in the panel today.
Thank you as well. Andre Lafreniere from Battelle, part of our medical technologies organization. If you're not familiar with Battelle, we're one of the world's largest research and development organizations with a little over 30 years in drug delivery and device technologies. We're really at the intersection of science and technology, and so that's one of the reasons I feel privileged to be part of Battelle in terms of advancing a lot of the new things that are coming up with precision medicine and the needs to blend a lot of different disciplines to make things happen, and doing that across the spectrum from toxicology to devices all the way to decision support software. So thanks again for having me part of this.
Good morning. My name is Advait Bhadkar. I'm with Pfizer. I lead a group called Novel Delivery Technologies, and that's part of the Biotherapeutics Pharmaceutical Sciences Organization. In short, my group is responsible for drug delivery technologies and advanced formulations for all of the large molecule portfolio for Pfizer. Been with Pfizer for 18 years now. I started off in the formulation and process development group many moons ago, and worked there for a while, then did a small stint for 5 years on the drug substance side of the biologics division, leading the technology and innovation for all of our drug substance group, and then started this role about 3 years ago, and been here since. So again, thanks, Sean, and thank you for the organizers for inviting me.
Hi, my name is Teresa Schubel. I work for Johnson & Johnson. I've been with Johnson & Johnson for almost 24 years. And Johnson & Johnson is made up of a consumer segment, a medical device segment, and a pharmaceutical segment. I've worked in research and development across all three. And just recently, leading the drug delivery and combination product team within Janssen. But I also am now in a Johnson & Johnson enterprise-wide corporate role supporting combination products, because combination products, which is the drug device delivery systems, do span across all the segments of J&J, with Nasacort within consumer, triclosan sutures dating back to 2002 within the medical device, and Cordis, most people know, drug-eluting stents. And then in addition, the Janssen portfolio, which is small molecule, large molecule, as well as you know, vaccines and immuno-oncology agents across six different therapeutic areas. So thank you for having me. Looking forward to the conversation.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Julia Rajpastab. I have over 20 years of experience in pharmaceutical industry with a focus on formulation and drug delivery, working across technology providers and also on the big pharma side, Baxter and Pfizer. The last 2 years I'm with Phosphorex. Phosphorex is contract research and development organization that works through all the areas of drug delivery, offering integrative approach from the feasibility study into the formulation, scale-up, and GLP manufacture, and working with a lot of innovative drug delivery companies and academia, helping you to move your products towards the clinical path. I've been with PAD for 10 years, so thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here. Valerie and the team, great job. So pleased to be here, meeting all the old friends and making the new ones. And thank you, Sean, for putting the panel.
Sure, of course. Yeah. Well, I think I'm okay on the mic. Well, just for those of you that don't know me, and I may throw in a few extra comments here myself, I lead the drug delivery team for biopharmaceutical development in AstraZeneca. Prior to joining AstraZeneca, I was with Amgen, where I led a lot of the device evaluation efforts and device strategy work, and also played a role in the formation of their central innovation group, which ultimately became some of their digital health work. So I think what you can really appreciate even before we get started is just the diversity that we've managed to accomplish with the panel in terms of experiences, large and small companies, and just a wealth of experience. So I'm really excited about this. Before we really start looking to the future, maybe we can just start by understanding the value of drug delivery systems and where you see that value playing out, whether it's for the patients directly or whether it's for the pharma partners or the innovators. I'd love to hear your points of view and maybe if an example or two of where it really played out positively, it would be great. Andre, do you want to get started?
Sure. I think one of the things that we can all relate to is, probably a good majority of us in the room have been patients at one point in time. And so I think we've all had the opportunity to experience firsthand what some of our innovation can bring in terms of different dosing regimens and the opportunity to do things differently. And I think when we look at where this space has really grown over the last even short amount of time, 5 years, in terms of the types of formulations and the types of delivery systems we're able to offer, and the level of convenience that offers patients is dramatic. And I can think of a couple of different systems that Patel's been involved with over the years that it's all about simplifying that user experience. So taking something that used to be multi-step and very complicated and making it 1, 2, 3 and a simple delivery and make it so intuitive that someone could pick it up without instructions. And that's really what we strive for, is to find that kind of instruction-free path to market.
If I may add, we don't even have to think about complexity and advanced technology. Even simple things like a tablet taken 3 times a day, simplifying that to make it once a day or once a week, that has a profound impact on patients' lives. I mean, I've been in the situation, I work in this field, right? And I'm educated. I know that if a doctor prescribes me medicine and I have to take it 3 times a day at a certain time, I'm intelligent enough to know that if I don't take it, there'll be consequences. But even then, I myself have missed doses, yeah. Right? And so if you imagine the general population where this awareness may not be there, I mean, that's a huge impact on patient outcomes that we can have by virtue of drug delivery, by simplifying even the simple tasks and making it much more patient-friendly. I think that's where the value of drug delivery has been so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you highlight really there is patients are people, and what they want to do is get back to being people. So how do we minimize the impact on their lives? Any other follow-ups?
Yeah, I can add to that. When I think about value of drug delivery, I think about two big buckets. One is enhancement of the properties of the existing molecules. And that's what I think the previous panelists touched on. We already have a molecule, and we can improve either through formulation, sustained release, depot, still a very big driver, or container closure and devices. And with devices, it's pretty much now became a must for many of the chronic indications. And then the second bucket is enabling technologies. These are the new modalities. So it's almost like, what is it that we have today and where is the future? Right. And we need both. We need a balance. It's not one or another. We do need both.
Mm-hmm. And maybe just the final thought is, when you look at the whole health care provider and the customer ecosystem, right? A lot of times we focus on the patient, but it could be the caregiver, it could be the care center. And understanding what that journey is for each of the disease areas, I think, is critical, because it's going to help you make those choices about which is the right, best, the best modality and delivery for the patient. Sometimes it is important that they come in and that they're in the right care center to be observed. Or in other cases, it's about patient compliance. How do you make it easier for the patient? We talked earlier about an example as we were prepping about the new Lasta, right, device that helps patients under chemotherapy, right? The insight there is the patient leaves, it delivers automatically, patients at home, not even aware except for a couple color changes. Yeah. And these are things that can change the patient and user experience, that sometimes when we are so focused on formulation and efficacy, we forget that one component that then drives you to having to have the formulation and device co-developed. And that's where sometimes if you're not together in the beginning during formulation and understanding those needs, you could miss an opportunity or have to put it into the pipeline as a multi-generational plan because the insights really weren't there at first. So that's kind of the value, right, that we talk about bringing to the table. What's the right solution?
Absolutely. Maria Teresa?
Yes, I wanted to comment about what happens for the early stage project, because we discussed, you know, about, well, from a patient perspective, so considering the product is already on the market. For early stage project, I would say, in the past, drug delivery was sometimes, nice to have, people were seeing something complex to be. But now, if you start to think high doses required for the MAPS, in particular for subcutaneous administration, non-viral gene delivery. So at a certain point, the drug delivery become mandatory from the beginning. And I see, in Sanofi, there is a really perception that it's changing what is drug delivery. Because before, it was like, no thanks. Now, people come to ask us, what can you propose? We have a high dose, we want to, so it's there is a change that is in a good sense for us. So this is great.
Well, Maria Teresa, you mentioned a couple of things there that I'd love to build on. When it comes to the traditional paradigms of delivery, so you talked about injections of monoclonal antibodies, certainly when it comes to large molecules, people tend to default to their thought process of injections. And typically when it's a small molecule, the assumption is you'll be in an oral dosage. But both of those are sort of just baseline technologies. You mentioned going to higher and higher doses. Can you talk a little bit about where you see the evolution of some of those systems, whether it's oral or whether it's injectables, and what sorts of technologies are required to enable those changes?
Yeah, but definitely the oral delivery of biologics is something we are working on in terms of we are interested in looking at external partners, because clearly it's a challenge, and this is something we are very interested. So we want to. It's true that today large modalities are for injection only. But I personally believe that there is a future for oral delivery of biologics. So I think that here at this PODD meeting, there are a lot of smaller companies that propose technologies. So I think there is a lot going on. And what we should do is really, there is a huge expertise from people who have been working in small molecules, in terms of physiological aspect, mechanistical aspect. So I think there is a good tight interaction that we need to work with people. Because in Sanofi, for example, we have, biologic people and small molecule people. So I'm really trying to create a synergy.
Never the two should mix.
Never to create a synergy, because I think there is a lot to learn. And I think the success will be really will come. I believe so. And but well, definitely working together with people who have been working for since always on the oral drug delivery.
So, any other technologies or trends you see coming along?
Well, I mean, just to build off what Maria Teresa was saying is that, you know, I think drug delivery kind of straddles both the spheres, right? Small and large molecules. I mean, in Pfizer, we have a small molecule pharmacy group and a large molecule group. I have many of my colleagues sitting in the audience here. But drug delivery is something that we actually try to integrate certain aspects of it across both of those spheres, because there is so much commonality there, and there's so much we can leverage from one to the other. I think in terms of the opportunity that these kinds of solutions provide, to me, it's about trying to integrate the aspect of taking the medicine into the patient's lives. I think that's something that these devices, the connectivity, and the newer technologies actually help us do, is, and ultimately that's going to affect the patient outcomes. And the more you can integrate that into the lives of the patient, where they don't actually have to go out of the way and accommodate a drug, but the drug is actually becomes a part of their lifestyle, I think that becomes much and more where the adherence will start improving, the compliance gets better, and hence you'll see better patient outcomes.
So do you think that, I'm assuming it doesn't get any easier. What are the additional challenges when you go to higher and higher doses, as Maria Teresa was saying earlier?
Sorry, can you?
Yeah, so if we have a particular therapy or we're developing a new therapy and we're recognizing that we need unusually high doses, what challenges does that pose, and how do we resolve some of those challenges? If we're talking about the evolution of drug delivery, I mean, I think the trend is pretty clear.
So I guess you have to define what higher and higher doses means, mm-hmm. right? Because if you need to get your targeted therapy to an area where the distribution is higher, mm-hmm. you can choose a different delivery modality. Mm-hmm. It's not just pumping more, right, of what you have into the system, right, into the body. So, you know, one example for severe depression, right, is this blood-brain barrier with a product Johnson & Johnson recently launched, which is Spravato, which is a nasal delivery system. And it's pretty effective on a very small subset of the population, but the dosing has to be so specific, because it's not just about more, it's about getting it where it needs to go so that the efficacy is there without necessarily looking at it just a dose. Another thought is, there's some research in the area of immuno-oncology agents and direct delivery into the tumor space and getting to the lymphatics. Is it really that you just need to cleanse the body with all these agents, where you run the risk of a cytokine storm in some cases, again, depending on the technology? But it's really more about what is it you're trying to accomplish. And if it is just simply higher volume, right, then it's higher volume, right? But, you know, IV bags and other approaches have been around for a long time, and they do work. But if there are other downside complications, devices can actually help support that, and thought of upfront to get back to the partnership early on. So within Johnson & Johnson, we have a center of excellence around drug delivery systems and combination products with all the therapeutic areas, so we can dig into those questions, and they're part of the initial chartering process. And now we're working towards pre-NME sources of collaboration, even across segments of J&J, where we can leverage expertise, because this is really, there may be personalized medicine, so it's going to be, you know, a balance of looking at your portfolio. What is it that you just want in your injectable core? What is it that you need to advance because of the treatment therapies? And how do you segment that across the organization so that, you know, for personalized medicine, it's achievable for each patient, but when it is something that can simply be a dosage form, that you don't confuse the two.
Yeah. I feel like your answer just opened so many doors into different areas. I got to start pulling on each one of those threads, everything from personalized medicine to whether the answer for high doses is an IV bag. I have to admit, an IV bag doesn't sound like the most patient-centric approach to delivering a high dose.
No, and I think, you know, when you look at the evolution of the space and where we've come in a short amount of time is, you know, we're trying to shift the conversation where it used to be that devices were kind of the afterthought of drug delivery, right? It was, well, I have this formulation, I've been working on it for a number of years, and now I'm going to shove it into the device or the platform that I actually have. And I think the advantage is now there's a lot more recognition of devices moving up that value chain of actually facilitating some things. And so I think what we're trying to do at Battelle is change the conversation around how much time you spend in formulation and when do you say, no, I just need the device to be able to do this. And I need the device to be able to deliver these large volumes and I need to be able to overcome these technological hurdles. And so that's where I think there's the happy blending that we've all been waiting for around devices actually enabling less time in the lab and more time with patients.
Yeah, no, I think those are some great points. And I often discuss the, you know, if you think of drug delivery as either targeting or a controlled release approach or a localization approach, you know, we can accomplish those things through engineering of the molecule. We can accomplish those things through formulation approaches, or we can accomplish those through delivery, through device approaches. So how do you guys think about that in your organizations, and how are the trade-offs between those approaches being considered? Or are they being considered?
So I think the key for us is really early engagement. So we have groups that sort of co-located along with our discovery organization, along with the researchers, and we get in there early, trying to understand the biology that's been that they're trying to drive, and then try to see, you know, is this something that can be addressed using existing solutions that we have within the group, or are there newer opportunities that or newer technologies that we need to explore? I think really fundamentally trying to leverage our existing platforms is something that we try to shoot for initially, but no, we do want to let the biology drive the decision of what technology is chosen. And then also early engagement to the commercial side of the organization I think is very important to get that early sort of read on the desired target product profile and to really see whether, you know, this molecule is something that can even be feasible. Would it even be feasible to fit that kind of a profile? And if there are fundamental changes that need to be made in terms of, you know, finding another molecule, for example, for the same target, then we want to do that earlier on rather than let it drag on into the development cycle. Sure. So I think early engagement and partnering with the discovery side of the organization and commercial for us is very key.
Yeah. I confirm, so Sanofi, we have the same, I would say, approach. We have a very, I would say, big device development group. Actually, I think I have some colleagues here. And so that belong to industrial affairs. Okay, so in the drug delivery and formulation group in R&D, from the very beginning, we have a defensibility assessment to really, so independent if there is a need of drug delivery or not. So the I would say the device perspective is explored very early in the beginning of the development, and this is something we try to evaluate, which is the medical value versus the commercial value. So this is something really that is assessed very early in the development of a molecule, and it changed completely. 10 years ago, it was not the case.
So we've talked a little bit about the value of drug delivery and some of the existing paradigms kind of in changes in the near term, but everyone came here to hear about the future of drug delivery. So let's pivot just a little bit. We started hearing about penetrating the blood-brain barrier, which is certainly a big challenge. People have been going after for years. I'd love to hear from each of you just sort of what you think the near-term horizon, when I'll let you define what near-term horizon is for a new innovation, but where do you see some of the big opportunities and what are you doing to address them? Do you want to go ahead and kick off, Julia?
Okay, I can start. It's amazing when you change the seat from a different vantage point, you see different perspective. Here I represent technology providers. In this role, we work with a lot of small biotech academy, and I'm just amazed how much is happening in drug delivery space, futuristic drug delivery space. It's been mentioned in the pie chart, gene delivery, you know, all kind of lipid nanoparticles, cell therapy, oncolytic viruses, and tissue targeting, right? We define tissue targeting specific delivery to the organ and to the tissue, but I think the next horizon is targeting immune system, ask immune system to do the job for you, to help to clean cancer and stuff like that. That's so exciting, and as Bob Lunger said this morning, and there would be things we are not even thinking now,
sure.
But there's a lot of those new technology, and I'm just so amazed and enjoying being part of the ride.
Yeah, so maybe I'll highlight a few. there is electroporation technology that does DNA modification that essentially can deliver a vaccine more effectively for at least it's in trial, so I can't say for sure if it's highly effective at this point with patients, but it's in trials. But it's a new way of looking at how do you do DNA modification, how do you increase uptake. And you need your core portfolio, right? You do need your core. You have to have a solid core. You have to even decide what you want to own intellectual property-wise, what you want to license, what you want exclusivity. And then you have these transformative technologies. And what's the role the organization plays in putting in those bets so we learn, right? CAR-T is another example where you're turning on your immune system to essentially target the cancer cells, and we have products in clinic across the globe and J&J as well, but you need to rethink the care center. Now patients are coming into your facility or potentially in your facility for therapy. So, you know, we have to rethink the way we put our boxes in place and how we deliver care to our patients, because the space is evolving with all these new agents and combination therapies, as mentioned this morning, where you might do drug delivery in combination with chemotherapy, and you might have therapies that are combined and not just the device and combination. So I would say breaking the barriers of traditional thinking. There may be technologies that are used in other areas of the world, right? And through electroporation would not have been necessarily the first place people would go for DNA modification. But it's a waveform, and it has the ability to do that if you deliver the drug at the same time, right? There's some uptake. But you have to have organizations willing to do that work in discovery and take those risks and control them, like Spravato I mentioned earlier with a blood-brain barrier. It's very, very carefully monitored, and it's not for broad release, and it will not be until we're quite sure we know, right, the right patient population. So there's an air of caution, but for the patients that it works for, they're in remission. So it behooves us as part of the organizations that we're in to take those chances in a controlled way, but do them with strong partnership from safety. And those are maybe three highlights, sure, of where the technology may be going.
Well, I can see kind of, and maybe give examples of two areas. I think on the small molecule side, we have large small molecules being developed that kind of challenge the rule of five. And these have a lot of potential, and drug delivery becomes a rate-limiting step in trying to get enough of it inside using a route of administration that is still more psychologically similar to a smaller molecule type of delivery technology. So I think that's another challenge. I think another area is gene medicine, and you mentioned that, Sean. I think there's a huge potential that we have to not only have an impact on patients, but correct monogenetic disorders. I mean, that's huge. And the worst thing we can do as an industry is not have a robust way of delivering these. Right now, the standard of the state of the art is a virus-based delivery, and there are many limitations for that. And I think the next generation of delivery technologies is really the non-viral based delivery for these gene therapies and gene editing tools that could give someone the option to go in for a second dose if the first one doesn't work, which they don't have today. And I think that's huge.
I agree with some of Teresa's comments as far as, you know, not reinventing the wheel and leveraging some of the things we've learned either in other industries or our own. And I think at Battelle, if we look at kind of the near term, we're trying to leverage those existing subcutaneous and intramuscular and other modalities and basically saying, how do we create technologies that allow us to go to larger volumes, to more viscous formulations, other things that essentially allow us to deliver it the same way, but not change what everyone has already invested all this time and energy in figuring out how to get patients to do. And so that we view as kind of the near-term strategy. But in the long term, I think we look at things like neuroelectric medicine and, you know, kind of the all of the above pathways strategy, where I think we're just now starting to hit the tip of some new pathways where there's some early evidence that those things can be pursued and exploited. But particularly with like cellular therapies, DNA, RNA-based therapies, also understanding that these are new areas and how might we design countermeasures in the future against those things where we have adverse reactions and, you know, we've created a cellular chain of events that, you know, may not be so predictable. And how do we find a way to understand how we study these and harness them for good and prevention of bad?
Yeah. Well, I wanted, yeah, so for me, I would say the one of the, so if you take long term, I would say the not unmet needs, but something that definitely we need to find a more effective approach is rare disease. Meaning, if you talk about gene delivery, for example, rare disease, how to get into the tissue and really express the gene of therapeutic interest. So this is something that, Sanofi is very involved in rare disease therapies, and so this is something that definitely I anticipate it will be a big it's a big challenge today, but it will be a big achievement in the future. Mm-hmm. Because you see a lot of there are companies working on how to target without really active ligands, specific tissue, specific cells. And so if you look at the mechanism of of rare disease, when there is an enzyme missing or not working properly, so you are really zooming, and I think it will be, drug delivery is needed definitely there. So this is something, and otherwise, something that has not been addressed. If you look at, antibodies already on the market, for example, today, what becomes a competitive landscape argument is how to reduce the frequency of your administration. And concretely, this is more for the sustained release aspect. This is something for me is missing today. Maybe it's missing because I'm not saying we don't have drug delivery technology, but because of the regulatory, and clinical effort that is needed to change a formulation of something already on the market, this is something that is a huge concern today.
So, I mean, we heard everything from targeting the immune system to blood-brain barrier to gene editing and delivery with AAVs and doing production in the cells. Certainly, there are a lot of technical challenges for any one of those things. What additional challenges are you seeing in the industry, whether it's in your own company or outside, whether it's regulatory or whether it's business considerations? I mean, Teresa was mentioning a little bit about just managing the risk around something so different from what the rest of the organization is used to dealing with. What are you seeing in your organizations in terms of the appetite for that risk and some of the barriers beyond the purely technical that are being faced?
I can start that. So I think there are, with these newer technologies, you know, which are yet to be proven in many cases, there is a hesitancy at a corporate level to sort of go all in into that. And, you know, some of these require a significant amount of investment in terms of not only the intellectual property, but also the right skill sets of people, facilities, capital investment. And so I think what we are seeing is sort of within Pfizer, at least sort of a wait, sort of a a hedging of our bets per se. So there are some areas that we are considering, you know, that yes, we are all into it, and we are willing to spend, you know, millions of dollars in putting up facilities even before we have a compound in the clinic or in late clinical studies. Whereas there are other technologies where we are saying, well, let us wait and watch. Let us invest to the next milestone. That milestone, the first milestone being a clinical study. And so I think in that environment, you know, it becomes important to use your resources very effectively and manage them such that we can not only deliver on the ones that we are all in, but also try to make significant accomplishments and move the needle in areas where we are investing in this milestone so that we can get that next investment in there.
I can follow up on advice. I think the barriers, again, three major barriers. One is the risks. And the risks come in all sorts. It's pharmaceutical risk, it's manufacturing risk, it's regulatory risk, it's clinical risk. The second is time. For the new modalities, it takes much longer than what we do for business. 60% of most of the big pharma portfolios, monoclonal antibodies, it took us 20 years to learn how to do that, but now we do them very well. And the budget, right? So these are the three major barriers. And again, from the technology provider, I'm so pleased to see, I see more and more biotechs and the new modalities like particles, micro and nanoparticles, advancing in terms of lowering this barrier. So as the industry, as a community together, what we can do is lower the barriers so it's easier for companies to take a chance. So it's not more 4-to-1 in terms of time and budget. Maybe it's 2-to-1. Mm-hmm. So if we can lower the barriers and help companies, we see some companies working with us on the depot side. In 3 years, they're in clinic. I don't think that's something we could envision 5 years ago, right? So lowering the barrier and helping people to enable these new modalities moving forward.
Yeah. No, I just think it's so... The clinical bridging, when you want to introduce drug delivery, is huge when you have something on the market. So basically, sometimes you need to repeat your phase three. And if you look at generic molecules, you know, you finally you don't repeat any clinical data. So we should find something in the middle. So maybe it can be a predictive in vitro model. But can be a simple PK. But today, there is a lot of debate. What is the minimum requirements in terms of clinical data when you want to switch a formulation? And today, this is an obstacle to, I would say, introduce more drug delivery systems.
Well, the diversity in our panel is actually reflected in our audience, right? We're pulling directly from some of our audience. And I'm confident that innovation is occurring in the drug delivery space at all of the companies represented here today. But the scale can be quite different at some of these companies, and they're playing a little bit different roles. I'd love to hear your point of view on the role of large pharma versus a tech supplier or a smaller group. How are they working together, and what are the sort of challenges you're seeing? And I'd love to hear an example story or two in our last few minutes.
Well, I'll just share the model that Johnson & Johnson has. So we have incubation centers, innovation centers. They call the incubation centers like J-Labs, right? And in addition to that, we have strategic partnerships sometimes with big pharma, which is pretty amazing, right? Wouldn't necessarily think we need to be competing, but partnering. So I think the model needs to change, or it has been changing, where to de-risk, you actually look for a smaller company that has already de-risked, right? And that's how you look at the two kind of converging, because the timelines are compressing, the regulatory landscape's getting more complex. So wherever there is smaller organizations that have been able to prove proof of principle or have early clinical data, and it's very promising, those are important targets, right, for J&J, right? And also providing facilities and capabilities for those that qualify and are able to even use the lab spaces within our company. So, and then there's a focus for external and internal innovation and being able to do both.
I think we regularly work in a kind of budget-pressured environment. So the challenge of innovation in a budget-pressured environment is always necessity is the mother of invention, right? So you have to find a solution for a fixed amount of time, or we have to move on and go on to the next thing. And so I think we generally look at it as an opportunity to kind of press the envelope of, you know, what's possible, what can be done within that space.
Any other thoughts?
Yeah, no, but for us, innovation, well, I would say is 90% external partnership, concretely. So even if, of course, we encourage to have an internal innovation, but we are, looking outside.
90% is a bigger ratio than I'm used to hearing a lot of people talk about. What are the drivers for sort of an imbalanced approach with a focus on external?
No, but this is, I would say, so we are encouraged to do innovation, okay? But then, finally, big pharmas often, you know, the it's more a development company than a research company. What is very delicate, because I experienced it in Sanofi, is that when the R&D people, I would say, they need to keep motivation, even if, you know, you go look outside what is bringing you innovation. So this is something, I would say, it's a delicate exercise to keep the dynamics of the company. So then, of course, there are all the consideration of budget as well. So it's, I would say, the... We have learned, I think, to work differently. Yeah. Okay, so the excellence is a must. The innovation as well. So you have a lot of, I would say, to be top everywhere. But what is great is that small company also changed the. I would say that there is really a look for synergy from all the actors. And I feel when I started to work in a pharmaceutical company more than 20 years ago, it's much easier now.
Sure.
So, of course, we are talking about drug delivery, but it's,
I think it's a great point to end on and a great motivation for all of the networking meetings that are going to be happening over the next day and a half. So thank you very much to my panelists. Please give them a round of applause and we'll welcome up the next panel.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast from the 2019 POD Drug Delivery Conference. The 2020 meeting will take place October 8th and 9th in Boston. For more information, visit theconferenceforum.org.